I'm Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, where we cut through the hype around emerging technology and look at what it really means for work, life, and business. This week, I'm joined by Ben Slavin, friend of the podcast and a longtime builder of AI technologies. We're going to talk about OpenAI's Dev Day, the company's annual developer conference that happened just about a week ago. In a year that has been full of a ton of different releases, it felt like this would be a perfect place to just check in and see what's happening. In the last few months, OpenAI has released a ton of products. One big one is Sora 2, which is this next-generation video generating model. It's pretty amazing, and it's fun. They've also released these connectors that extends the power of ChatGPT by allowing it to talk to external applications and data sources. And of course, there was ChatGPT 5, which was the big flagship model release that was released in a safer and more deliberate way, which has had some interesting consequences. That excludes all of the different Dev Day announcements that we're going to get into when I talk with Ben later on in the show. But first, let's talk about some things that are happening this week. Walmart is partnering with OpenAI to build an AI-first shopping experience. If you can imagine talking with ChatGPT about your dinner ideas, but instead of then having to take that and bring it into an application, well, now ChatGPT may have the ability to build a shopping list at Walmart, check the local inventory to see if the products that you want are in stock, or add those items directly to your cart so you can just hit the checkout button and go stand in line and pick it up or drive up and have them put it into your car. We'll circle back to this idea when we talk with Ben later on, but this is this increasingly amazing idea of apps that would live inside of ChatGPT, something where partnerships with companies like Expedia, Target, Uber, Zillow will start to add new functionality that lets you talk to these applications and explore them directly in ChatGPT. OpenAI is not stopping there. They're also teased this idea of an AI certification program, which seems like it's part of its goal to expand the adoption rate, but also give employees the ability to show and prove that they're AI literate in a world where companies are desiring that the next workforce understand AI at a very critical level. And last, Slack is rolling out some native AI agents through their Salesforce AI cloud, which is a big announcement that's happening at this week's Dreamforce conference going on right now in San Francisco. This is going to build in functionality that allows you to talk with these AI bots that are natively built into Slack and have them summarize channels or schedule meetings with members within a group, or make sure that you can talk with data and get back information from, say, your Google Drive all agentically. So it's going to be pretty interesting, exciting to use or see. Can't wait to check it out. Now, if you find any of this interesting, I always make sure I include the links to all of this inside of the show notes, so feel free to take a look there or also check out the details on wypr.org or my website, jasonperry.com. So that's it for the week's headlines. Let's get into my conversation with Ben Slavin. OpenAI's annual developer conference, Dev Day, was Monday, October 6th, and it felt like it was a perfect time for us to just talk about the state of all things OpenAI, what's happening, what's new. It's been an interesting few months. OpenAI's had a whole bunch of products that they've launched, including ChatGPT 5, Sora 2, which is a really awesome video generation tool. They also released something called Pulse, and they've added these things called connectors that allow you to pull in external data into their systems. And I also want to talk about some of the things that happened at Dev Day, even though they're a little bit more developer-focused, but you might find interesting. So I decided to bring on a good friend, Ben Slavin. He's a serial entrepreneur and an AI expert based in D.C. He has over 20 years building neural networks and machine learning systems, including a lot of work with organizations like NASA. So, Ben, I'm glad to have you here. How are you doing?
Happy to be here. I'm doing great.
All right. I figured let's start at the top with Dev Day. Was it what you were expecting? Did you see anything that was particularly interesting about OpenAI's big event?
Yeah, I'll start by saying I wasn't sure what to expect this year. 2023, Dev Day was a big deal. 2024 was a little quiet.
Yeah.
2025, they were back. There was a large venue. They had a lot of announcements, a lot of new products. So I would say it was bigger this year, both in terms of the audience and the features they announced. And I think that there was a lot of focus on connectivity.
So connectivity is something that I find very interesting. There's this idea of something called MCP, Model Context Protocol. It's about connecting data into these systems. And it's a big thing. If you use ChatGPT now, one of the issues is that it doesn't know your data, right? And I thought two of the really interesting announcements were about this MCP stuff, but also being able to visualize it in different ways. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about some of the tools that were released or the new features that were released. And one of those is around MCP. They've got this thing called App SDK. And SDK stands for Software Development Kit. It's designed to help developers bring things into the OpenAI platform. So it starts with MCP, this model connection protocol, or I'm sorry.
Model context.
Model context protocol that allows the system to reach out. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But in addition to that, there's a whole generative aspect where it can create new visualizations, as you mentioned, new interfaces. And also through the agent kit, there's an ability to influence how that works and how data flows through the interface. And they're giving developers more control than they've had ever before.
I like to think of this as having, as an organization, your own personal data that you control or your business's own data and being able to push this data into ChatGPT, but still maintain some control in how it flows and how it's used. So if you're, and this was the example that OpenAI used at the event with Zillow. You ask a question about a house, and now this MCP connector allows ChatGPT to talk to Zillow, and then Zillow to bring back interfaces that kind of look like it.
I think that's a great description. I think as a developer, I try to think about how the data is moving and who owns the data and where it lives. And so from the consumer standpoint, it feels like it's being pushed in, but it's actually giving OpenAI and ChatGPT the tools to pull on demand that information. So the entire Zillow database is still owned by Zillow. All the housing data, they still own it, still runs on their servers. But when you ask for that information and it decides to reach out, it's a decision that's made by ChatGPT. It reaches out, it asks Zillow, what do you have right now? What is the answer to this question? How can I get the answer to this user? Zillow passes that over. It uses it in the context of the conversation with you.
There's so many possibilities there. Just the thinking about that and what that could mean for the interfaces that exist in ChatGPT, it's mind-blowing. I mean, for business users, if you're using things like HubSpot or Salesforce, which are customer relationship management platforms, or you have a project management platform, you can ask questions, which is something that's been happening for a bit now, but you can get it back in a way that platform has more control of. Or for something that's consumer facing like Amazon or shopping, like this is an opportunity to have more control over what that interface looks like. That I think is an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, that's right. And I think right now there are something like 30 MCP connectors that are available out of the box. There are so many more that exist out on the web that people are working on that will soon be available because of some of the announcements that came this past week.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to see. So I want to shift gears to ChatGPT-5 for a minute, if you don't mind. The thing that's been interesting about ChatGPT-5 versus ChatGPT-4.0, and the O was for Omni, instead of like 4.0, is that the folks didn't seem to like it nearly as much as I think. It just didn't feel as if it was necessarily as good, or at least that was the early impressions. But also there was this feeling that maybe we're hitting like the bar of growth, right? I think about during my childhood, I would say, I guess it was, when Moore's Law was, created, this idea that we're going to see exponential CPU growth forever, right? Every year, CPUs just get faster and faster and faster. And I think that was the expectation that like ChatGPT-5 is going to be, I don't know, a magnitude better than ChatGPT-4.0. But it's okay. I don't know. What do you think?
So first, I hope that they've standardized their naming. Yes. I continue to hear that people are confused. I appreciate that you explained 4.0, but there was also 4. There were other versions. And so now we're on ChatGPT 5. I hope the next version is 6. We'll see. One of the things that I think people reacted to most viscerally was the tone and the style and more of the emotional aspect of how the tool worked. When I talk to engineers or developers who are using it for business applications, they understood some of the trade-offs that were being made. So what's happening behind the scenes with ChatGPT-5 is it's making some decisions. Now, the interface might look the same to you if you go to chatgpt.com and you ask a question, but behind the scenes, it is choosing, do I want to spend more or less computational resources to answer this question? And ChatGPT-5 really tapped into the dynamic nature of that. So if it can give you an answer quickly and efficiently, it will try to do that. If it decides that it needs to think a little bit more, it needs to spend a little bit more time, it will. And that changes the way that it feels. It's also trying to economize. We heard that Sam Altman was upset that people were saying please and thank you because it was spending watts of energy. That is something that ChatGPT is trying to address. It's trying to find the balance of energy usage and providing answers that users expect and want. In terms of the long-term growth trajectory, I don't know exactly where we are. It has felt to me as if things are slowing down. But I want to just step back for a second. ChatGPT 3.5 is really where all of this started. The field has been active for decades and decades. But this current moment started with the release of ChatGPT 3.5. That was late 2022. I don't know if you remember, the OpenAI team was telling us all that we would be out of jobs in 3 or 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying the job market is not upended by some of this, but things are moving less quickly than they promised. And so I think they're finally getting to a point where we're starting to see some of those decreasing returns with every version that comes out. I continue to expect a lot of continued advancement, but I think it's going to change.
Like, the way that ChatGPT works today is different. And this is some of the, like, architecting that's happening behind the scenes that may not feel as if it's more powerful, but just like you said, it's not one model anymore. It's multiple models, and decisions are made behind the scenes to talk to this one thing, which is like a quick response model versus something that it says, I need to think on that for a moment. And then it uses a deeper thinking model. And so I think of this as like horizontal growth versus vertical growth. It's different ways that they're finding to make these things better. So it's just a change. A little bit different than the Moore's Law is like, how can we do things more in parallel?
Yeah, and I would say for anyone who's curious about how this works, if you're using ChatGPT, this is true also for Claude from Anthropic, which is one of the large competitors of OpenAI. If you ask a question, you'll start to see a little drop-down box or a little bit of text before it gives you the answer. If you want to see what's happening behind the scenes, you can click on that, and it will actually show you that quote-unquote thought process.
Chain of thought, I think is what it's called.
Right. So you get to see the chain of thought. There are a few things that happen behind the scenes, things like choosing which model to use that you don't get to see. That's proprietary. But you get to see it sort of talking to itself.
Another thing that I noticed with ChatGPT-5 is more guardrails. Some of this is due to suicides that have happened of kids who are using these tools and turning them into friends or asking questions. Some of this is around the turning these things into like humans or a version of a human that you can have a date and have a conversation with. And I think that Sam Altman and OpenAI has been put in a position that they have to figure out what the rules are and how do they start to restrict some of these things. And that's making it different. Like if you talked with your ChatGPT in 4.0, it may respond differently in 5 because these restrictions are trying to start to provide those safeguards. And it's not that it's not smarter. It's just maybe feels less like a human being that you're talking to in some ways.
I think some of that's the economization that we talked about. Hmm. But I do think some of it is in response to the way that people use these systems. None of us could predict the ways that these systems are being used today. Everyone who uses these systems has their own way of interacting. They are all unique interactions, unique questions. We all come with our own life and perspective that we bring to our interfaces with the machine. One thing that we are seeing is enhanced legislation. So we just saw California's SB 53, which was signed into law recently. This is the first step that we're really seeing in the U.S. to try to set guardrails through government. I think that there is, in technology, often this battle where a tech company will try to get ahead of legislation, try to say, you don't need to regulate us. You don't need to constrain us and put up the guardrails because we will do it for ourselves. So I think that we'll continue to see some back and forth, some clamping down on the ways that people use it, but also opening some things up to try to navigate the legislative environment.
So I want to turn to one of my favorite things to play with since its release, which is Sora 2. Sora 2 is a AI video generation tool. You can type a prompt and it will generate a few seconds of video, and it's good. There are other competitors. I think at Google I.O. they released something called Google Flow or Veo 3, which is a video generation tool. So there are other things that do it. We've exchanged a few of these videos. What's been your experience with this so far?
So I've approached Sora 2 with an open mind. I think that it is a real... Sora 2 is tons of fun. So I just want to start there.
It's fun.
It is... It's a way to experiment and to be creative and to render things and bring things into existence just from your mind. It's incredible. It's also very questionable from an ethics standpoint. Some people will talk about the environmental impact, and I think that there are serious conversations to have there from the power usage. But is it appropriate to have dead celebrities endorsing positions, political viewpoints, saying things, engaging? That's what we're starting to see. We're starting to see people's likeness being appropriated. Now, OpenAI has done a lot to protect against that. You can't upload photos of individuals. You can't ask it to use politicians. You can't ask it to use a photograph that you provide of yourself or anyone else. So there are some guardrails that have been put up to try to prevent this, but we're starting to see both incredible play and fun and exploration, but also people testing the limits, people trying to see what they can get away with within the system. And I don't know where this is going to lead us.
It's, and for anyone who hasn't had a chance to try this, it's an invite-only app. You can download it. I think you could also use Sora in ChatGPT as a paid version to generate video. But the app is, it's like TikTok. And you can generate whatever you want, and you can swipe up and down and go to the next, you know, generated video. And like an example of what you're talking about, Ben, I came across this video of Martin Luther King and a Popeyes saying how good the fried chicken is, you know, and this is possible. And it's possible because I think some of the copyright issues is, well, who do you use? You use folks who are not alive. And so there's a ton of videos of Michael Jackson, of politicians, of JFK. I think we both have witnessed a bunch of Abraham Lincoln video clips. And so it's this interesting place. Tupac. There were so many Tupac videos. I don't know, you know, why, but when you're restricted, it forces something. But then you get into this weird space of what can you create? What do you create with it?
I completely agree. And I think one of the things that we're seeing is people are exploring.
Yes.
I was just at a conference in Philadelphia that was hosted at the Barnes Museum. And we sat over lunch creating images of Andre the Giant walking around with Andy Warhol, exploring the gallery, talking about it. Bob Ross joined in. We were able to create these sorts of fun experiences. What it means in the long run, I don't know. But one of the things that's been fun on the social network side of Sora is the equivalent of what duets were on TikTok. The ability to take something that someone else has generated and say, no, but change this. So, mm-hmm. for example, there's a popular one that's going around now of a child opening presents under a Christmas tree. And people will just respond and remix it and say, now with a G.I. Joe action figure or now with something else. And they're able to add their own little bit to it. Or they can even include their own avatar, so it's their face rather than this child that is doing it. And that's done through a 3D scan in the app. So it is still a little bit more restricted and it's a little bit more controlled than just uploading a photograph of a random person.
It's going to be very, very interesting days as things continue to evolve. So Dev Day just ended. It was, you know, again, Monday, October the 6th. The thing that you have to wonder is what's ahead? Where does all this go? If you were to a person predicting the future, if you're looking at 2026 when we have the next Dev Day in October, what are some of the things that you're thinking that we may see? New models, a new SOAR 3? What do you think?
I certainly expect new models. One of the big questions before I even answer that, though, is what sort of company does OpenAI want to be?
Yes.
A prominent tech blogger has called them the accidental consumer tech company. They are really focusing on things like Sora, fun, very little business utility in that at the moment. There are a lot of conversations about what it could mean for marketing and advertising. Really, where is their focus? Are they focused on things that people will enjoy using or things that will enhance productivity? So I think that's one of the big questions. In terms of what's in the year ahead, absolutely new models. We expect that they will continue to train. ChatGPT-5 has a knowledge cutoff. That means the training data that was used for it ended on September 30th, 2024. Just to put that in context, ChatGPT-5, with no external help, doesn't know who won the presidential election last year. That's incredible to think about it. So we will definitely see new models with updated world knowledge, with an updated basis for what they do. Now, just to share for your listeners, there are techniques. ChatGPT can go out and access the web, so it has more relevant or more recent information, but its basis cut off a year ago. I also think we're going to see a lot with agents. So this is something we've been talking about for a couple of years now. The idea of an agent is it allows an LLM, a chat system, to use tools and to iterate and to pursue a goal by using those tools. So I think that we will see more agents where people will come up with scripts to help run a marketing campaign or come up with scripts for how do I build a business or come up with scripts for how do I prepare for the SATs? Not just asking the question once and responding, but sort of walking through, checking on different things outside of the system, walking you through a process. I also think we're going to see a lot more with connectivity. That is absolutely the message that I heard from Dev Day this year. It's about MCP, it's about agents, it's about apps within the ecosystem. And that connectivity is really important for the utility of ChatGPT, but it's also really important for OpenAI's mission and stickiness. We are seeing a lot of competition across the ecosystem. I mentioned Claude from Anthropic, which is one of the major competitors. OpenAI wants to make sure that if you are using ChatGPT, you have no reason to leave their ecosystem. So I think connectivity, bringing data in, connecting to data on the outside, connecting experiences to, for example, Zillow or other experiences you have outside of ChatGPT, I think is going to be increasingly important. One last thing, I think, is predictability. A lot of the conversation that we have is about the fact that you don't know what you're going to get. It makes it up every time. And I think that we talked a little bit earlier about guardrails. Guardrails may constrain, but they also help make sure that things are more predictable. So I expect that there will be more ways that developers and users can establish sort of paths of action. And we started to see that even this year with the release of AgentKit, which allows the creation of workflows that mean you can give it procedural guidance to follow down a path, not just something open-ended, but say, first do this. If this happens, then do this. If something else, do that, giving it a path to follow. So that predictability is something that I also think we're going to see more of in the year ahead.
That's a lot of things that are possibly coming in agentic AI or agents, workflows, more connectivity, so many possibilities that this opens up. Thanks, Ben. That's perfect. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm hoping to have you on again in the future. If you're interested in checking out or finding out more about Ben, check out his website. That's benslavin.com, spelled S-L-A-V-I-N. And until next time.
Thanks, Jason. It's been fun.
Before we wrap, if all these OpenAI announcements left you wondering what's next, here's a wild one. The company is planning to loosen ChatGPT's guardrails, allowing adult-oriented content. That's right, adult-oriented content and conversations with possible like erotica-type conversations for age-verified users. It sounds like to me that it's just a matter of time before we have ChatGPT after dark, coming soon to a phone near you. All right, that's going to be interesting. Thanks to the team at WYPR, our producer, Sam Burmes-Dawes, and Myrna Martinez, head of operations and marketing at Perry Labs. You'll find links to everything we've talked about in the show notes. If you have ideas for guests, topics, or comments, contact us at jasonmperry.com.